from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Judy Campbell, and today for Dave Iverson. Coming up on Forum, barge trains are still rolling, at least for now. Barge unions say they will strike on Monday if no deal is reached. We'll get the latest on the dispute, and we want to hear from you. If you're a BART rider, how are you coping with the uncertainty? And at 9:30, the U.S. Department of Agriculture says it will not close Foster Farms' three California chicken processing plants linked to a salmonella outbreak that has sickened at least 278 people across 17 states. The USDA has threatened to close the plants, but said late yesterday the company had made immediate and substantive changes. How safe is your chicken? Join us for Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio, good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Judy Campbell, and today for Dave Iverson. Shortly before midnight last night, when the 60-day cooling-off period ordered by Governor Jerry Brown officially expired, BART's unions announced they would not go on strike today and would negotiate through the weekend. However, the threat of a Monday strike still looms. In this half hour, we'll get the latest on the dispute over pay, benefits, and pension costs, and we want to hear from you. If you're a BART rider, how are you coping with the uncertainty? And do you have advice for either side? If you'd like to join the discussion, give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum at kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. Joining us today for the discussion are Randy Rentschler, Director of Legislation and Public Affairs at the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, the Transportation Planning Coordinator and Financing Agency for the 9-County San Francisco Bay Area. Thanks for joining.
That's my pleasure.
And Dan Bracke is here, blogger and online editor with KQED. He edits NewsFix, KQED's blog about news in the Bay Area and beyond. Thanks for being here, Dan.
Hey, Judy.
And we also have transportation writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, Michael Cabanatuan. Michael Cabanatuan, thanks for joining. Were you watching the negotiations? Were you outside of the negotiations last night?
I was. I was outside of the negotiations until probably about certainly when the announcement was made about 11:45, but well after.
So what do we know about what happened last night and why they decided on the delay?
Well, the unions agreed that they would continue bargaining past the deadline. Apparently, they signed an official extension, an agreement that they would continue to bargain through at least Sunday at midnight.
Now, I understand BART. We were expecting BART to give a new proposal yesterday, and that didn't happen?
There is a media blackout. Some people call it a gag order. It's basically an agreement not to speak to the press, not to bargain in public. So we really don't know the details. You hear little rumors that something's going to happen, or you hear sort of a general discussion of what's going on, but they've all agreed that they're not going to disclose the details. So you get little bits and pieces, but it's not clear whether BART has submitted another offer or not. What is clear is that there does seem to be an exchange of views, and they seem to be making some progress.
Well, the last there was one public proposal that was the last public proposal we heard about was last week. Is that right? And it sounds like BART was offering a 10.25% in pay increases and an increase in pension contributions.
Right. That's about correct.
And what was the difference at that point with the unions? So were they far apart?
I cannot remember precisely what the union's offer was, but it was somewhere in the range of 17%, depending on how you calculate things. The pension agreement is what they call a pension swap. The employees would be reimbursed 72 cents for each dollar that they contribute to the pension plan. Part of the disagreement has been over whether that should be included as part of the pay increase or whether that should be calculated separately. But in any case, it adds to the expense of the package or the value of the package.
Now, I'm sure it's hard for you to do your job there with the media blackout, but what was your sense being there of the mood? Are they optimistic?
In any negotiations, but particularly at this stage, you do get a sense of the sort of up and down, the emotional roller coaster. And early this week, I believe it was on Tuesday, there seemed to be a lot of optimism. Everyone was, really pretty cheerful on both sides, thought they were getting places. Wednesday, that crashed. There was an accusation that BART had withdrawn an offer at the table. BART negotiators did not seem happy, and the union negotiators didn't seem happy either. That mood seems to have changed last night. There, people, when they came out to make their announcement, both the BART people and also the union people seemed much more optimistic.
So they left about midnight last night, and now they're supposed to come back to the table at 10:10 this morning.
Right.
Okay. Now, Dan Brecky, so here we enter. We've gone from one day of commuter uncertainty to pushing a day of commuter uncertainty on Monday. How are Bay Area commuters reacting to all this?
Well, I'd say people are not very happy about what's going on. This affects a lot of people. There are hundreds of thousands of people who ride BART every day. There are hundreds of thousands more who are affected when the system is impaired for whatever reason, people driving or taking other forms of transit. And people are – another strike like we had in July will impose a certain amount of discomfort on people, and they're not happy about that. There's also some issues about and these have lingered throughout these talks, and it's probably not brand new to this round of contract negotiations. There's a widespread perception that BART workers are overpaid, they're coddled, and maybe they don't deliver value for money. And I think I'm saying that's a perception that comes through when you look at blog comments, for instance. Look at comments on the on any of the newspaper sites where people can make comments. There's a very virulent, angry strain of anti-worker feeling out there. And this is also reflected in polls. KPIX has done a couple of Survey USA polls in the last few months, and they show consistently low support for the union position in this negotiation.
And you mentioned pay. I think most recent I've seen is the average line-level employee at BART made $76,500 in gross pay last year, the most of any transit agency in the state. Workers don't contribute towards their pensions and pay $92 a month toward health care, regardless of how many dependents they have. So some people may feel like they get they are getting a worse deal at work.
Yeah, it's really hard to put all the numbers in context. And I think I do think having gone through a really hard time as a region, or as a state or as a nation with high unemployment, people having to work in much less favorable conditions as life and the modern workplace proceed, people feel resentful of anybody who's carving out maybe a little bit better deal. I mean, I think that's – I mean, maybe that's a little bit of psychoanalysis of what's going on in blog comments, but I think it's a very real thing.
But your sense is that most of the anger about the strike is not directed at BART, but it's directed at the unions at this point.
At this point, it is. But I will say something else, that it's – Grace Cronican, the general manager of BART, talked to Tom Vakar at length on KTVU about the issues. And the position that she has staked out is that even though the district does have an outlook of substantial operating surpluses in the coming decade, the agency really needs to reserve those for capital expenses, debt service, and that and stuff like that. That is all very real. But there's another sort of substrata of anger here, which is how BART actually works. The trains are very crowded. There are some stations that are very dirty. 16th Street, close to KQED, is one of them. But it's not only in a place like that. There's North Berkeley, a very affluent place and affluent commuter crowd there. They had an escalator that was down for 4 months. And they would change the sign every month. It'll be back in a month. Well, they finally got it running. But people are looking at that kind of thing, and they're going to demand of the agency and perhaps the general manager, well, okay, show us the improvements you're making with this money you're saving by really driving a hard bargain with the unions.
Randy Rentschler with Metropolitan Transportation Commission. How much does this public opinion matter? If people are angry about this, does that make a difference?
Well, look, I do think it does. You know, I think for a lot of commuters, they're probably, you know, reminiscing back to the film Groundhog Day, in which the Bill Murray character keeps waking up to the same event time and again. I think the commuters, of course, are experiencing without the humor. I do think that this has been a grind on people to be prepared again and again and again for the possibility that their commute could be, you know, very difficult. And as we get into the fall as opposed to the summer, the commute will be harder and harder.
Right. Well, it took quite a toll in July, a lighter time for traffic. It really gummed things up during the 4-day walkout.
Well, look, it really does. And as people come back from their summer break and kids get back in school, and also keep in mind that while everyone doesn't feel it, the Bay Area economy is coming back. The Bay Area collectively over a year ago has about 100,000 more jobs in it. Those people, you know, obviously need to get to work. The highways tend to fill up. Our bridge count traffic is up across the whole Bay Area. And a little bit of change in demand on the system, particularly when the system is fully engaged, can have an outcome of a lot more congestion.
If you would like to join us, if you're a BART rider, how are you coping with the uncertainty? Do you have advice for either side, opinions you'd like to weigh in on? Give us a call. It's 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can email your comments, forum@kqed.org, or post them on our website. That's kqed.org/forum. Randy Rentschler, what's your advice for commuters as they're looking towards Monday? What are their alternate commutes? What should they be thinking about with the bridge?
Well, look, we've tried to do a number of things in the meantime. You know, one important aspect is Caltrans put a significant extension on the carpool lane on the Cypress, which is going toward the bridge on Interstate 880. There's also the ability to get in carpool lanes on West Grand Avenue entrance onto the Bay Bridge to save you some time there. I think the most important thing for people out there who are going to be affected by this strike is you're either going to have to talk to your employers to see if they can give you some more flex time or work at home. We have sent a letter to 10,000 employers asking them to be more flexible about that point. But to a certain extent, for a lot of people, there is just no alternative, and you're going to have to either get up much earlier or find carpooling or other alternatives. It's not going to be necessarily an easy thing to replace the capacity that BART has.
And have you found at all that people change their habits after the walkout or as they're looking at other commuting options?
Do
more people ride the ferry?
Well, yeah, you know, the ferry riders, and they serve, you know, mostly the communities of Alameda, Oakland, and Vallejo. They do get a sustained ridership increase. You know, writ large, what we saw in the Bay Area, particularly after the earthquake in 1989, which established and reestablished ferry service, is that ferry service stayed and has been very productive. So you do see a shift that takes place. On the other side, when BART loses all these riders, it takes a while to shift back. People find out that they have other alternatives. I think the real key, though, is we have a system here in the Bay Area that is aged. It needs to be replaced. Investment needs to be made in it, not just on BART. This is the case now, and I think it's an important case to really understand this. But our local streets and roads, San Francisco Muni, Caltrain, there's a whole lot of our infrastructure that needs to have some reinvestment in it. We've had years of neglect, and I think BART, we're really at that inflection point, and I think that this labor dispute really focuses that.
Let's hear from our listeners. Gus joins us from San Francisco. Hi, Gus.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Hi. Yeah, so I'm just calling in to express my thoughts on this. I think it's just very unfortunate that at this time when BART really is flush with cash, that they're still trying to cut down their workers. I think that any company, public agency, organization, if they want to succeed, if they want to provide good services or good products, they need to invest in their employees. BART workers, like workers all over the country, took hits. They took cuts during the recession. And now they're merely just trying to seek some sort of economic resuscitation. And for BART to be denying that of them, demanding that they take additional cuts in their ultimate take-home pay, whether that be in the form of benefits or pensions, is despicable, in my opinion.
Well, thanks so much for your opinion, Gus. We also have a listener who wrote in of all of Bart's with a contrary view of all of Bart's union's specious claims to entitlements of benefits beyond those of workers in the private sector. The most annoying is that their pay increase is justified by projected increases in ridership and revenue. BART is not a profit-sharing business. If there is excess revenue, fix the myriad broken escalators or get someone competent to manage their maintenance. Clean, upgrade the cars, fix signs, teach workers to test the intercoms in every train before they leave the terminal. I can't tell you how many times these gross oversights and problems embarrass me when I have out-of-town visitors. Michael Cabanatuan, these are issues that have been swirling around this debate.
Right, that's true. And it's important to keep in mind that BART is no longer a new state-of-the-art space-age system as it was in 1972 when it started. It's more than 40 years old now, and it has a lot of things, including elevators, escalators, the rail cars, a whole lot of things that need to be repaired, or in many cases replaced. And BART needs a lot of money to do that. I believe the estimate is something like $7 billion over the next 20 years.
And how do you respond to Gus's point that, you know, BART is it's making more money, it should be investing in its employees?
BART is not making money. BART is still losing money. BART still operates with heavy subsidies. BART is bringing in more money than it has in the past, but it clearly needs to spend some of that money on infrastructure. I sat down as well with Grace Krunikin, the general manager, and she acknowledges that the employees deserve a pay raise and that they haven't had one in 8 years, but she said it has to be one that allows them to make improvements in the system as well.
Dan Brecke, Grace Krunikin, there's talk of her maybe joining negotiations today. The union leaders are excited. They say that there are bigger names coming into the negotiations. What do we know about this?
Well, she was reportedly, and Michael actually knows directly about this, but she was reportedly at the talks last night. The unions expressed confidence that she will be there at 10 a.m. when they resume talks. They say that's important because she's the only one who really has the authority to make the call on some of these issues. So that's what we know. As far as the other involvement, a couple of BART directors are supposed to be joining. We don't know who they are. There might be some educated guesses about that. Also some what the SEIU 1021 president Roxanne Sanchez described as local legislative leaders have joined. So those are all probably positive signs that there's wider involvement and wider, you know, public pressure to get this thing settled. But we'll see.
Bobby, join us from San Francisco.
Hi, good morning. Question about this gag order that we're not supposed to know what's happening in the negotiations. It seems really counterintuitive to me. We, the taxpayers, pay these salaries. And it's like telling the owner of a company that you're not to be privy to negotiations that could potentially shut down your company. And I suspect it has to do with the unions not wanting to know how ridiculous and out of touch their demands are. And it's kind of outrageous. I wonder what the legality is behind that or what the thoughts are there.
Randy Rentschler, any thoughts on the gag order?
No, look, I really don't. As far as relationship between BART and its unions, look, that's really between them. I think the role that the commission has that I work for is to make sure that people have options and that people are aware of what those options are.
Dan Brecke, gag order, there is a suggestion that the gag order has actually helped negotiations, that they're negotiating at the table instead of with the press.
Well, I think that's exactly why that kind of thing comes up. It's not a legal order per se. It's an agreement that the two sides make with a mediator. And the thought is it's probably inflammatory to try to negotiate this in the media. And we've seen both sides try to vilify the other in terms of their positions and in terms of sometimes their you know, personalities. So I think that's the thinking behind it. At the same time, hell, we want to know. We're the media. We want to know what the heck is going on in there and be able to tell people about it. And we are ultimately the people who are paying for this.
Michael Cabanatuan, you want to weigh in on this anger? He's expressing anger that we should know what these negotiations are about.
Well, I'd like to make a couple of points. I think Dan got it right. I mean, as reporters, we want to know everything we possibly can, so it's frustrating not to get details. On the other hand, it had devolved into a situation where, you know, there was a lot of, you know, basically name-calling and shouting and misrepresenting each other's proposals, or only, you know, talking a little bit about one proposal, you know, a lot of spin going on. And so I think the idea is that it can move forward better if they're focusing not on their publicity campaigns, but on what they're doing at the bargaining table. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is that so much goes on at the bargaining table that what's released is not always the complete picture, and it's not always up to date. Someone can bring an offer, and that can be changed, it can be withdrawn, they can discuss it, and, you know, it might be there only for a few minutes. I know that what the federal mediator is doing is something they call supposals, which is, rather than an official proposal, it's kind of an informal proposal that he brings and says, well, what if the unions were to propose something like this? Do you think that might be something you'd be interested in? And then if Bart says yes, it is, then he sort of goes back and gets a formal proposal, and they try to build a framework they can work on. So that kind of thing is constantly changing, and unless you're really at the bargaining table, and I've asked, I haven't been invited, you really don't know what's going on.
We have Jody writing on our Facebook page, Bart striking makes me furious. My teenager goes to school in San Francisco, and there is no good alternative for him to get into the city. Adults need to compromise, no strike. Barry from Danville, join us.
Yeah, good morning. I was wondering, I hear a 10% pay increase this union would like to have. They pay for medical and other items. What does that really turn out to be on take-home pay for their employees?
Michael Cabot, Dan Brecke, do you have a...
Well, listen, what the unions have been saying, and I do think it's a credible claim, is that if you add up everything, if you look at the BART proposal, 10% pay increase coupled with heightened pension and health care contributions, they're actually seeing a shrinking take-home pay. And one of the union leaders, Antoinette Bryant of ATU 1555, says that's just a non-starter for the membership and won't be ratified. It's a little hard to pencil out any other proposals because we don't really know. For instance, this pension swap that Michael mentioned before, you really don't know how that's going to pencil out until you see what the actual pay packages are. So we would all like to know in black and white what the answer is, and we don't yet.
Randy Rentschler, what are you expecting to see on Monday?
Well, if there is no BART service, it's going to be congested out there. It is, and people need to be prepared for that. If you're traveling on Interstate 880 northbound or southbound, your commute's going to be up to an hour longer. If you're commuting on Highway 24 through the Caldecott from Walnut Creek and central Contra Costa County, your commute's going to be upwards of an hour longer. If you're going to be on a Caltrain and you think that you've got your park in place in that parking lot and it's been there for weeks for you, on a day of a BART strike, someone else may have that. So people need to get up earlier. They probably need to talk to their employers about maybe coming in later. It's going to be very inconvenient, and there's very little that we on the public transit side or on the you know, carpooling side can do about it. Specifically, I would ask individuals to go to 511.org, a webpage where they can see all these options and information about the potential BART strike, or call 511 on your telephone.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us to talk about the BART strike. That was Randy Rentschler, Director of Legislation and Public Affairs at the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, also joined by Dan Brecke, blogger and online editor for KQED. He's the editor of NewsFix, KQED's blog about news in the Bay Area and beyond, and Michael Cabanatuan, the transportation writer at the San Francisco Chronicle. Thank you all so much for joining us. In our next half hour, we'll discuss food safety groups' calls for recalls of some foster farm chicken following a salmonella outbreak. I'm Judy Campbell, in today for Dave Iverson.